Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The U.S. mobilizes allies and gas suppliers amid concerns Russia could shut off Europe's energy supply. Plus, worsening chip shortages have the Commerce Department on edge, and it's Fed Chair Jerome Powell's day in the spotlight, with markets hanging on his every word.
Bottom line, expect Mr. Powell to start prepping the public and the markets for the Fed to start taking on a much more hawkish approach to monetary policy for the next little while.
It's Wednesday, January 26th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. U.S. officials are engaging with allies to try to secure energy supplies to Europe in the event of a war in Ukraine. The White House is concerned about repercussions for Europe if Western allies apply further economic and political sanctions on Russia. Press Secretary Jen Psaki says the White House hopes to try to cushion the impact if Russia were to cut off energy supplies.
Disruption, of course, in physical energy supplies transiting Ukraine would most acutely affect natural gas markets in Europe. And so we're engaging our European allies to coordinate response planning. But we've also been working to identify additional volumes of non-Russian natural gas from North Africa and the Middle East, Asia, and the United States. We're in discussion with major natural gas producers around the globe to understand their capacity and willingness to temporarily surge natural gas output and to allocate these volumes to Europe.
Germany is the biggest buyer of Russian gas in the world, and on average, EU countries rely on Russian imports for 40% of their gas needs. 39 people are still reported missing after their boat capsized off Florida yesterday. Authorities say the boat was believed to be used for human smuggling from the Bahamas. A Good Samaritan alerted the U.S. Coast Guard after rescuing a man found clinging to a vessel. According to the survivor, the travelers faced severe weather conditions and none were wearing life jackets. This comes just days after 88 Haitians were intercepted aboard a freighter near the Bahamas. Cargo imports have tumbled at America's busiest port for a fourth straight month. More than 100 ships are waiting to dock in Los Angeles and Long Beach in California. Imports at the complex fell 14% in December compared to the previous year. According to industry officials, efforts to relieve bottlenecks by quickly moving inbound containers away from cargo terminals have led to a new issue, a glut of empty containers awaiting shipment back to Asia. Worsening matters is a spike in COVID-19 infections among dock workers, more of whom have tested positive this month than in all of 2021. And
hello, it's Nancy.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi has announced plans to seek re-election to Congress. The 81-year-old Democrat has led her party on Capitol Hill for almost two decades and is not expected to face serious competition for her San Francisco House seat. However, Pelosi notably did not mention whether she intends to stay on as the Democratic leader. The global chip shortage is showing no signs of letting up, as the tiny components used in everything from cars to smartphones remain one of the world's most sought-after products. Now, a new report from the U.S. Commerce Department is shedding light on just how serious the semiconductor shortage has become for American manufacturers and what it will take to recover. Here with the details is finance reporter Julie Steinberg. Hey, Julie.
Hi, good morning.
You've had a chance to review the Commerce Department's latest report. What does it say?
It says that U.S. manufacturers and other companies that use semiconductors are down to less than 5 days of inventory for key chips. And by comparison, in 2019, companies generally had 40 days of inventory for key chips.
And why are these limited inventories such a concern?
Because it means one tiny snag can completely upend operations. So, for example, a single shutdown can ripple through the supply chain. If you have an overseas factory that closes in a company's supply chain for more than a few days, that can cause the company to exhaust its inventories. So if you have a disruption overseas, which might shut down a semiconductor plant for 2 to 3 weeks, that has the potential to ripple through and disable a manufacturing facility and furlough workers in the United States if that facility only has 3 to 5 days of inventory.
Right, and that's especially concerning if you're manufacturing, let's say, particularly important medical devices in the middle of a pandemic.
Exactly.
Julie, is the Commerce Department just in the business of assessing this chip shortage, or are they going further and recommending any ways out of this?
So the Commerce Department is pushing for legislation to boost domestic chip production. Now, the Senate passed legislation last year that would include around $52 billion for expanding domestic chip production. And this week, the House finally released details of its own package, which authorizes $45 billion for grants and loans to support supply chain resilience and manufacturing of critical goods. The Commerce Department released its report as a way to support these efforts.
Julie Steinberg is a finance reporter for the Journal. Julie, thank you.
Thank you.
Coming up, from Fed announcements to GDP data and a continuing stream of earnings reports, market watchers have their hands full this week. We've got more on what's in store for Wall Street after the break.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. Robert Half is here to help. Our recruiting professionals utilize our proprietary AI to connect businesses with highly skilled talent. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
You couldn't script a more dramatic week for the release of major economic indicators. Against the backdrop of earnings season, supply chain issues, a pandemic, and worsening inflation, we're also waiting for the Fed's latest decision and an update on U.S. GDP. All the while, stock markets have been roiled by volatility since the beginning of the year. Joining us to put all this into perspective is the Journal's chief economics commentator, Greg Ipp. Hi, Greg.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Of course, perhaps the biggest news this week comes later today when the Fed is expected to peel back the curtain on its interest rate plans. What are we expecting to hear?
Well, they're probably not going to actually raise interest rates at this week's meeting, but you'll probably get a strong signal from Chair Jerome Powell in his press conference that they will start raising interest rates as soon as their meeting in March. And the reason this is significant is that if you actually cast your mind back into the mists of time, like 2020, they didn't think they were going to start raising interest rates until 2024 at the earliest. Well, what's happened since then? Well, the economy came roaring back from the pandemic-induced recession faster than anybody expected. Even more dramatically, inflation erupted much more sharply than anyone had expected. So bottom line, expect Mr. Powell to start prepping the public and the markets for the Fed to start taking on a much more hawkish approach to monetary policy for the next little while.
Got it. That's helpful context because we've seen a lot of market volatility this week, despite the fact that we've known for some time the Fed is going to raise interest rates in March. So why is there so much uncertainty in the markets?
You know, markets are a little weird, Luke. Sometimes they foreshadow long before anybody else is thinking about big events, and sometimes they just really take a long time to internalize what everybody else seems to know is pretty darned obvious. And it just seems that they're only starting to internalize now what the Fed's been telling us for a number of months, which is that that period of extraordinarily cheap money is over, folks. You see that the 2-year bond yield, for example, is now up dramatically. It's up around 1% from close to zero in the last year. And so I think investors are adjusting for a world where the cost of credit's going to be more expensive. They have a few other things on their mind, too. The economy seems to be slowing abruptly, which appears to be mostly because of the Omicron variant of COVID-19. And COVID-19 itself might be adding new inflation risks. But I think the other thing going on here, Luke, is that, you know, we've just had this exceptionally strong stock market for the last year or two, and there's a lot of speculative froth. And I think that in some sense that they were all due for a comeuppance.
Yeah, and froth, frankly, takes some time to come down, right? So perhaps it's not entirely surprising markets are still trying to find their footing. Moving along, investors will be also watching tomorrow's fourth quarter GDP data. What are we expecting to see there?
Well, the consensus is that the economy grew around a 5% annual rate in the fourth quarter, which would be very, very good. And that will top off a year in which the economy grew roughly around 5%, which would be, again, one of the strongest since Ronald Reagan was president. And I think that going forward, the story is a lot murkier. Right now, economists are expecting a fairly sharp slowing of annualized growth from that 5% rate to maybe as little as 2% in the current quarter. First of all, it reflects the fact that we're losing some of the fiscal stimulus that boosted growth last year. Secondly, we have this Omicron variant, which appears to have probably hurt consumption of services and so forth.
Yeah, and globally, the picture isn't too pretty either. The IMF is just out with its latest global economic growth outlook. Pretty disappointing for 2022, forecasting just 4.4% expansion versus the estimate last year of 5.9%. What does that tell us about the state of the global economy?
So a lot of the headwinds that we're talking about in the United States, you can find variants of that in other markets as well. I think the other thing that IMF is warning us about is that the supply chain disruptions, which have done so much to hold back growth and push up inflation, they don't seem to be going away. I mean, that conga line of container ships trying to unload off of the California ports is as long as ever. China's zero COVID policy essentially guarantees that will be more disruptions to supply chains of product coming out of China. And we really don't know when some of the barriers the virus has posed to consumer spending and labor markets are going to go away. So this has a little bit of that whiff of stagflation, by which I mean a shock to our economies that both pushes up price pressures and slows growth.
Greg, so how big of a risk is the pandemic to the growth outlook? Just a few weeks ago, there was enthusiasm COVID-19 becoming increasingly endemic was actually going to be a relief, perhaps compared to the instability of the last 2 years. Is that not the thinking anymore?
You're absolutely right. When Omicron came along, I think that there was a lot of optimism about the discovery that while this variant was much more transmissible than, say, the Delta variant, it was also much milder. So maybe at the end of this wave, everybody would have some degree of immunity and COVID-19 would retreat to becoming somewhat like influenza. You know, that still may be the case, but I would caution very much against this kind of a new optimistic interpretation. Even endemic COVID is still going to make a lot of people sick and still result in a lot of fatalities. And what we've seen, by the way, in the last 2 years is that the presence of this virus, I think, has lasting effects on a lot of aspects on our economy. We know that there are millions of people who are not working or looking for work, either because they're sick with COVID, they're looking after somebody who's got COVID, or they're afraid of getting COVID. And so long as this virus is still around, endemic or not, I think that creates almost like a supply shock that reduces how much economic output we can have before we start to run out of resources. So I think that overall, there's in some sense reality check in order, where people sort of understand the fact that just because COVID isn't top of mind and dominating our lives any longer doesn't mean it's not there in the background causing various economic problems.
Greg Ipp is the Journal's chief economics commentator. Greg, thanks so much.
All right. Thanks very much for having me.
And finally, the QR or quick response code has become the contactless way to easily view information like menus on your phone or tablet. But as our reporter Catherine O'Shea Evans explains, the proliferation of pixelated squares at restaurants has sparked intense debate about whether the QR ought to remain a fixture of the dining experience after the pandemic.
One of the upsides is that you're saving paper, so you're not being super wasteful. I interviewed a restaurateur and they have hundreds of types of fish on their menu. And if one gets eaten up and they don't have any more, they can instantly remove it from the menu. So you're not disappointing your guests that way.
And while nobody likes those surprises, other diners resent yet another digital intrusion.
One thing is that you're sitting down to have a lovely meal at a restaurant, presumably, and you're pulling your phone out right away. And maybe the whole point of being at the restaurant is to connect with the people you're there with and have a conversation. And if you're on your phone trying to zero in to this very super teeny tiny script and see what the heck is on offer, it can be really frustrating.
Call me old-fashioned, I already miss the paper menu. And that's what's news for Wednesday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.